astonishment. Who was I to grant them what only gods can grant? But their astonishment said nothing. And when there was no astonishment left, there was nothing left to forgive.
That was Dr. Fadi Juda, Palestinian-American physician, poet, and translator, delivering poems at the Gaza Habibti exhibition held in Houston, Texas in May 2025. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kabu.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Join KABU around the campfire. Become a member during Camp KABU's Summer Drive, taking place now through June 29th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kabu.fm/give. Thank you.
Hi there, this is Juan Carlos Ordóñez, host of Policy for the People. Before we get started, I just want to remind you that KABU has a Camp KABU Summer Membership Drive goal of $50,000. Please help us get there by becoming a member today. Text KBOO to 44321. Thanks, and now, on to the show. Welcome to Policy for the People, a show that explores the public policies that can lift up all Oregonians. This show is a collaboration between KMUZ Radio and the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ordóñez. Even though its proponents call it the One Big Beautiful Bill, a better name for the reconciliation bill passed by the U.S. House of Representatives a few weeks ago might be the Big Ugly. The proposed legislation is certainly massive, taking up more than 1,000 pages. But what's in those pages is a monstrosity. As many critics have rightly pointed out, at its core, the package slashes health coverage and food assistance for struggling families. It does this in order to help pay for tax cuts that would mainly go to the rich. But one thing that hasn't gotten a lot of attention is the fact that the bill threatens to shrink Oregon revenue collections due to the way our state tax code connects to the federal tax code. So if the U.S. House reconciliation bill becomes law and the Oregon legislature does nothing, Oregon will end up having less money to address the needs of Oregonians, just when there will be greater need due to the federal cuts to healthcare and nutrition assistance. My colleague Daniel Hauser wrote an article analyzing this issue. Daniel is the deputy director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I spoke with Daniel about his analysis. Here is our conversation. Daniel, how are you?
I'm good, Juan Carlos. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. So, Daniel, a couple of weeks ago, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a budget reconciliation bill. It's a massive piece of legislation, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, massive feels like an understatement. It's the type of document that you could easily imagine someone using as an example of like a heavy thousand. It's over 1,000 pages, right? It looks like it could be a weapon in some alternate universe. It's an enormous piece of legislation. And it's not just the like sheer magnitude of the pages, it's the changes. I mean, the amount of things they're doing to the civil service, to how we determine whether or not a nonprofit has tax eligibility, to how we, you know, whether or not people can access certain tax credits, to Medicaid, to, you know, to food assistance, to border security. I mean, it is truly a monster, both in size and content.
Yeah, and it's interesting that some lawmakers have even acknowledged that they haven't read the whole thing before voting on it and voting to approve it.
I'd be impressed if any of the lawmakers, if any of them read the whole thing.
You've written a piece recently that says that if this bill becomes law, it will have an impact on Oregon tax collections. What's your main takeaway in this article?
Sure. I imagine some of the listeners have heard of this big budget reconciliation bill, as Trump and Republicans have referred to it as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. This bill includes so many different measures, like I noted before. Cuts to Medicaid, right? The Oregon Health Plan in Oregon are getting a lot of the focus and a lot of the attention because it could result in many, many thousands of Oregon families getting kicked off of healthcare. Cuts to nutrition assistance, right? The SNAP program is one of the largest federal programs that Oregon participates in that gets people food, right? Keeps people from going hungry, keeps children fed. Those are getting cut right in this bill. There are all sorts of other things in it as well. But one of the reasons, well, like the key reason that they're packaging all this stuff together is because they want to pass a big pile of tax cuts and tax cut extensions. And as part of that, Oregon, we will automatically connect, and I'll get into the weeds and what that means later, but we'll automatically connect to a bunch of those federal tax cuts that disproportionately help the very richest people in America. Well, we're going to do the same thing here in Oregon. We're going to automatically connect to them. And really, the crux of the paper is pointing out this connection to the federal tax code that will result in all sorts of changes to the Oregon tax code if they pass this budget reconciliation bill federally. It's going to blow a huge hole in Oregon's general fund, our general fund being the way we fund the core services that Oregonians need to make ends meet.
Before we get into those specifics of the connection to the federal tax code, can you remind us how we got here? Why is Congress even having to make this decision on a massive tax and budget package at this particular time?
Absolutely. In Trump 1.0, in his first term in office, they passed something called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And this was done in 2017. This package of tax cuts largely pushed the tax cuts towards corporations and towards the very richest households, right? So low-income working families got peanuts, the richest got a huge tax cut. But how they had to structure it to get around Senate rules, because they wanted to get around the filibuster by using this tool called the budget reconciliation process. To do that, they had to make some of the tax cuts temporary, right? They made a bunch of the tax cuts for corporations permanent, right? Shocker. But they made the ones that actually the peanuts that working families got and some of the really significant giveaways to the rich, they made those temporary and they expire without action at the end of the year. Most all of the individual income tax cuts. So that's really set up this crisis, right? It set up this challenge for the federal government and Congress to reconcile is, what do we do then? What do we do with this opportunity, I think is as it's seen by the Republicans, this opportunity to reassess this package of tax cuts? Because the tax cuts were so large and so egregious in many ways, there's a really big budget impact from the tax cuts. I mean, trillions of dollars in increased federal deficit as a result of these decisions that were made in 2017. When they go to renew them, they're looking at ways then, well, how can we renew all these tax cuts and give big breaks to the rich, but we don't want the deficit to grow quite that much. So how can we also cut services for low-income families? How can we eviscerate health insurance and food assistance as a way of saving money? So that way we can afford those really big, egregious tax cuts for the rich.
The original 2017 Trump tax cuts, as you said, peanuts for those at the bottom and big giveaways to those at the top. How do the tax cuts in the current package compare to those back then? Are we pretty much just renewing these tax cuts? Are they pretty much the same? What's the story there?
There's a huge pile that is just being renewed. And then there are a number that are being changed in little ways while being renewed. But there are a whole bunch of completely new ideas, right? Totally new campaign promises that Trump put out there, or that they've been able to kind of weasel into the bill as they've been developing this at 2 a.m. in the morning behind closed doors. So there are a whole bunch of new tax policies in there that are going to be really problematic, even if some of them sound nice. Right. So one example of that is there's a proposal to exempt from taxation, from income taxes, overtime pay. Right. And overtime pay is the kind of thing that, you know, people think of, they identify with families that are, you know, a blue collar job and someone's taking an extra shift to help, you know, make the rent, or, you know, they really think of it and imagine something that's very like hardworking family oriented. You know, what we see in practice is that a lot of the families that would in fact benefit from exempting overtime from taxation are actually quite high income, right? The disproportionate flow of this tax break that would be prepared or proposed as part of this legislation would flow to high income earners, right? This wouldn't be going to the lowest earning 20%. It'd be going disproportionately to the richest 1 in 5 workers in Oregon. So that's, you know, one of these, just an example of one of the ways they're expanding on the tax cuts in this package. I have pages and pages. As I mentioned, there's 1,000 pages in the bill. My pages of notes are not quite that long, but there are dozens of provisions that are new tax cuts. Some of them, like no tax on overtime, sound reasonable, but when you dig in, aren't. Others of them don't actually sound all that reasonable at all. You know, let me give you an example of one of those. They're proposing that if you want to take some stock that has appreciated over time and is now worth more, you can donate it to a private school voucher fund, and then you could avoid paying any tax on a lot of those gains that your stock has had over the last decade or what have you, right? So we're talking about undermining public education. We're talking about tax breaks disproportionately for the richest households. And that statement could apply to the tax cuts they're renewing and to many of the new tax cuts that they're piling into this trillions of dollar package.
Do we have numbers on kind of the distribution, who gets what from this overall tax package?
Yeah, I mean, if we look at the package as a whole, the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy has assessed how it will flow to different income levels in Oregon, right? So this is specific to Oregon as a result of the federal tax breaks. So the lowest earning 1 in 5 Oregonians, the bottom 20%, these are folks who make less than $27,000 a year. They'll average about $130, right?
So $130?
$130 a year, right? If we look at folks in the middle, right, the middle earning 20%, you know, what people think of as like a working family making around $50,000 to $90,000 or so, you know, they'll get about $1,500, right? So we're starting to get a little bit bigger, right, as we go up the income spectrum. But then things completely collapse in any attempt to make this sound like it's actually helping working families when we get to the richest 1% of Oregonians. These are folks who make more than $750,000 a year. They're expected to get a tax break of more than $41,000, right? So we're talking about, you know, the tax break for the richest 1% is more than anyone in the bottom, or is about as much as anyone in the bottom 40% of Oregonians makes in an entire year, right? So we're talking about the low-income households, the whole amount they make in a year to afford their rent, every car payments, every cost of childcare, every cost that they're running into, the amount they make in a year is less than the tax cut that's going to be going to the top 1%. So this is a really, really upside down proposal and package, looking just at the tax side, right? If you don't even consider the fact that we're also going to be kicking many of those families off of their health insurance and leaving them hungrier and sicker.
Daniel, I want to go back to something you said earlier, which is that even the provision in the reconciliation bill that would eliminate taxes on overtime pay, even that provision disproportionately favors the well-off, which is a bit surprising. Can you flesh that out for us? Why is that?
Yeah, overtime, we have to keep in mind, only helps families and individuals and workers that are able to receive overtime and do receive overtime. There are all sorts of other workers in our community who are not going to be able to access overtime, right? So consider, for example, someone who works two part-time jobs and works 50 hours a week, right? They aren't getting overtime even though they're working 10 hours more than 40 a week, right? If they were working in one job, they might get overtime on that last 10 hours. But because they're having to work multiple jobs to kind of piece together a living, they wouldn't receive any benefit from this tax cut. And that really points at what I think is one of the key challenges with picking something like overtime or tips or, you know, this particular part of income and saying we're going to not tax that one, is it really creates winners or losers that is not connected to income. Right? It's different than means testing a policy and saying, like, you know what, we want to support low-income working families. How about if you make $30,000 a year, we give you an extra $2,000 in a tax cut or a tax credit? That's the kind of thing that would help someone if they worked two jobs or one job, if they worked overtime or not, right? That's the kind of even, neutral way of supporting low-income families that we should be looking at and that we have supported in the past. But when you pick out something like overtime, I mean, consider someone who works 50, 60 hours a week at driving Uber, right? Or, you know, doing rideshare, gig work, you know, they're independent contractors. They're not getting overtime, right? On the flip side, there are some, you know, high earning workers who do get overtime, even though they already are in the top 20% richest households, right, in the state. So, you know, when they ran the numbers on just the no tax on overtime nationally, they estimated that 57% of the tax benefits would go to the top 1%, or I'm sorry, the top 20%, right? That richest one in five Oregonians or Americans would get almost 60% of the benefits. The bottom 20%, the bottom 40% even would share 2% of the benefits, right? So we want to talk about a policy that sounds nice, but in practice is not. Then I think no tax on overtime is a great example. And keep in mind, right? I mean, we're talking about losing federally tens of billions of dollars per year to this tax break. Here in Oregon, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars that's no longer available to invest in our schools, to give the top 20% disproportionately a tax break on their overtime income.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Policy for the People on listener-supported KABU Community Radio. If you're enjoying this conversation, show your support for this program and all your favorite KABU programs by donating to Camp KABU's Summer Membership Drive today at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks. And now, back to our conversation with Daniel Hauser of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. We're discussing the fact that if the reconciliation bill passed by the U.S. House of Representatives becomes law, it will shrink Oregon's revenue collections, leaving the state with less resources to invest in healthcare, schools, and other essential services. Going back to the point where we began, which is that this massive tax package will have an impact on Oregon tax collections. Certainly, it's going to affect tax collections at the federal level, of course, because it's a massive tax cut, but it's also going to reduce, you said, Oregon tax collections. Why is that?
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a more complicated piece of tax law that seems to be a battle every couple of years. So this concept of tax connection is really helpful to kind of disentangle and try and understand, because it's really important, right? It results in billions of dollars and changes to Oregon's tax system. So there are two really key things. One is where we connect to the federal tax code, and the second is how we connect. So the question of where we connect, in Oregon, we currently connect to the definition of taxable income. So that includes also all the additions, subtractions, itemized deductions. It includes basically everything except for tax credits and then tax rates, right? We could connect at a different point, right? Other states choose to connect at, you know, adjusted gross income or at other points in the tax breakdown. And there are also circumstances where we explicitly don't connect to things because we've made a decision as a legislative body or as a population that we don't want to. So how we connect, right? you know, is sort of the second part of that. We can either connect at a point in time, which is known as a static connection. So we might say, we're going to replicate the federal tax law here in Oregon as of January 1st, 2024, right? So that would be a static connection point right there. Anything that's in the tax law at that date, it's also part of Oregon tax law. The other way of doing it is what's called a rolling reconnect. With a rolling reconnect, what ends up happening is whenever Congress changes the federal tax law, Oregon will automatically duplicate it here in the state, right? And so, you know, one good example of this is when they changed itemized deductions in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they restricted the mortgage interest deduction from $1 million in mortgage debt to $750,000 in mortgage debt. Oregon didn't pass any law, didn't do anything to make it to where Oregon only allowed you to deduct $750,000 in mortgage debt. It just automatically became the way it is here in Oregon. So rolling reconnect is really this idea that Oregon will automatically connect to wherever we're connected in the tax code. Static connection is this concept that we will connect to the tax code just at a point in time, at a specific date. The upside of a static connection is that if Congress changes the tax code and does a bunch of bad things, like, I don't know, they might be doing in this huge, ugly bill they're debating today, Oregon would have a chance to decide whether or not we want to connect or not, right? Versus rolling reconnect, where it'll just automatically become state law, and then we'll have to figure out what to do with it from there.
Maybe to get to how it would really affect Oregonians, if this U.S. House reconciliation bills ultimately becomes federal law, and the Oregon legislature doesn't act, what kind of impact could it have on the state budget and on the lives of Oregonians?
So there's an ongoing analysis and debate among lawyers and state officials about which provisions in the more than 1,000-page bill Oregon would connect to. A few of the items seem more clear, such as, you know, Oregon's rolling reconnect will duplicate the exemption for overtime income. Others are less clear, like how some of the changes to the international corporate tax policies will impact corporate taxable income here in Oregon. But as soon as it does become federal law, many of the provisions will start in the 2025 tax year, right? They've set a bunch of these tax breaks in the big bill federally to start in the current tax year, right? So effectively retroactive. And so that means the state would have to figure out very quickly where we are and are not connected. So Oregonians could start adjusting their withholdings on their paychecks, quarterly tax payments for some folks who, you know, submit quarterly payments. So that also means Oregon would immediately start losing revenue it would otherwise expect to receive and already planned on spending to fund education, human services, housing, and all sorts of other services our families need.
Do you have a sense? Does the state have a sense of how much money is at stake here? How much revenue Oregon could lose from all these different connections to the tax code, to the federal tax code?
Yeah, it's hard to say at this time with precision what it'll mean in total, but certainly in the tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in lost revenue every year, right? Real money. And there are three kind of key reasons why we can't be a little bit more certain at this time. First, we don't know with complete certainty all the provisions will automatically connect to, right? Like, we don't know what the Senate's going to do to the bill, and we don't know of what ends up coming out of the Senate that Trump theoretically will sign, which of those for sure Oregon will or won't connect to. So it's hard to have a complete picture at this stage. And second, we don't have precise revenue estimates for most of the provisions, or even imprecise estimates for many of them, right? Like the no tax on overtime, as an example, is one where the price tag has been estimated by a national group at more than $300 million per year in Oregon in lost revenue, right? I mean, that's a lot of money. I mean, that is like on the magnitude of what's needed to address wildfire prevention and protection in the state. And so that's kind of the second challenge. It's just like, we don't know how much each of these particular provisions are. And finally, some small parts of the federal tax changes could raise revenue in Oregon, right? One example is in Oregon, we have a federal tax subtraction. And that means that some people can deduct their federal taxes from their Oregon income tax. So if Oregonians on the whole pay less federal tax, even if it's disproportionately rich people paying less federal tax, then we end up with a smaller federal tax subtraction, right? Because we're paying less federal taxes. And therefore, Oregonians would owe more to the state of Oregon because that particular tax break would be smaller. So the parts that raise revenue, you know, they will likely exist in the final bill, but they're going to be far, far smaller than the parts that cost the state revenue. So we know it'll be negative on the whole, We just can't say what the sum is at the time. Like, you know, what is the precise number yet? We'd really need the Senate and the bill to be kind of signed, really, to know for sure.
What happens at the end of the day if the Oregon legislature fails to disconnect from all these new federal tax provisions that cost the state money, and we end up losing hundreds of millions of dollars in the current budget period? What does that mean ultimately for Oregonians? How could it impact their lives?
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to say with certainty because it depends how the legislature responds, right? Because what this will mean is right now, Oregon lawmakers are debating a budget based on a revenue forecast for the next 2 years that just assumes that the current set of tax cuts is renewed, right? It doesn't assume really any meaningful expansions to tax cuts. It also doesn't assume any lost revenue from connection to new tax cuts, right? So if we do end up, as you set up as a scenario, connecting to hundreds of millions of dollars in lost revenue, that means the legislature will have approved a budget that assumes that money comes in. If that money then doesn't come in, right, and we have a September revenue forecast or a December revenue forecast this year that shows that we're actually on track to get $300 million less per year as a result of connecting to these federal tax proposals, the legislature is going to have to decide, you know, what $300 million in education, in shelter, in childcare assistance, I mean, the list goes on and on. What are they going to cut? Right, they're going to have to cut from existing programs, from things that they're approving and debating today. They're going to have to slash those down by hundreds of millions of dollars, or they're going to have to find some way of raising revenue. And our legislature here in Oregon does not have a history of stepping in crises, at least not in the last 15 years, maybe in the last 18 years, but of stepping into crises and making hard decisions to raise taxes. They should, they could, but it's not necessarily what our history has shown is a likely outcome. So what that means then is they're going to be cutting these services, cutting these programs, unless they can find the money elsewhere.
So what would need to happen for the legislature to not follow these federal policies if they get enacted? Like what are the steps that need to take place?
The best move that they can make today is to just shift to static connection, right? We talked about before the difference between static and rolling reconnect. If we move to a static connection point, that means none of these new tax breaks will automatically become part of tax law in Oregon. The legislature then would have time to decide, do we want to connect to some of these? Do we want to stay static and not connect to some of these? So really the best thing they can do in this session is to move to permanent static connection. The Oregon House did go ahead and approve a static connection bill for just the 2025 tax year, our current year we're in right now. The Senate should pass that, right? That's a good starting point, at least buys us a year. But it will drop us off in January 1st, 2026, reconnected fully to the federal tax package. And then we will have to have that second part of the conversation I referenced, which is what do we want to disconnect from? Now that we've automatically doubled down on all of these terrible ideas, which of them are we going to drop, right? Which of them are we going to disconnect from because they're going to cost us hundreds of millions of dollars? They're going to disproportionately flow to the richest households. They're going to turn our tax code into Swiss cheese with all these new tax breaks. So the legislature in the short session that'll start early in the 2026 calendar year, they'll have to figure out which of these are we going to disconnect from. And those are going to be really hard conversations. So the best move is just shift to static, right? Allow us to decide we want to connect to something rather than the default being this rolling connection where we'll have to have these hard conversations about what to disconnect from because it's already in tax law in Oregon.
Daniel, any final words of wisdom you want to share with us regarding this reconciliation package, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, and what it means for Oregon tax collections and just generally the well-being of Oregonians?
Yeah, we're talking about a package that has so many layers of harm, right? You know, a lot of the broader public discord has been around, we're going to cut healthcare, we're going to cut food and nutrition assistance from these families. We're going to do these cuts, that way we can pay for tax breaks for the richest billionaires and households all around the nation. Right. And I think that is a place where we should be focusing and we should be emphasizing. And what we've added today is a little additional piece, which is Oregon's going to double down on these tax breaks. Right. We're going to give bigger gifts to the rich and wealthy, and we're going to have even less money to fund the services Oregonians depend on. If we do end up with it, and Oregon is connected to it and doubling down on it, then Oregonians also have a really prime opportunity to stand up and talk to their neighbors, right? Talk to people who live in their community who are representing them in Salem and tell them, look, we cannot be doubling down on these tax breaks. We have to protect the families in our community that are struggling the most. And we can do this by shifting to a static connection. We can do this by disconnecting from the most egregious measures. And we can do this by really reversing the horror that exists in this huge, ugly bill by taxing the rich and corporations more too, right? Like, we can reverse some of the errors that are part of this federal tax package. You know, just as they're cutting taxes for the rich, we can raise them, right? And we can use that to invest in families in our state. So I think for me, I hope people take away from this the fact that there is something we can do. There is agency, there is opportunity here in Oregon to address some of the flaws that exist in this federal tax package.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Juan Carlos. It's always a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Policy for the People. A quick reminder that KBOO has a Camp KBOO summer membership drive goal of $50,000. Please help us get there by becoming a member today. Text KBOO to 44321. Thanks, and see you next time.
A cat named Joe. He wears a red bandana, plays a blues piano,
a honky-tonk down in Mexico.
He wears a purple sash and a black mustache,
a honky-tonk down in Mexico.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform, which means